ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Christopher Skase. Young, handsome, entrepreneur. He finds epic success in the 80s.
He came with that cowboy energy. He was doing big things.
Skase becomes a media mogul.
He outbid the legendary Rupert Murdoch.
His empire teeters, but he outfoxes them all. I'm Mark Humphreys. To binge the full series now, search for ABC Rewind and look for Skase, Fall of a Tycoon on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So once again, I find myself standing in front of the vending machine at work, scanning what's on offer. There's your standard stuff, like chocolate bars and chips, and also some healthier options like pure freeze-dried crispy apple. Nah.
Please select a product.
It's a salt and vinegar chip day.
Please present your card.
Now, I might think that I made that decision consciously, but it turns out that may not be the case. So how much of this choice was locked in by my brain before I was even aware of it? Hi, I'm Belinda Smith, and you're listening to Lab Notes, the ABC Radio National show that dissects the science behind new discoveries and current events. To tell us how our brain weighs up different snacks is Violet Che, a PhD student who's studying the neuroscience of food choices at the University of Melbourne. So imagine you're standing in front of a vending machine. What snack do you pick?
Definitely, there are so many options. I think I'm someone that tends to go for what I feel like in the moment, actually. I'm pretty intuitive with my food choices, so it will really depend on the options in front of me.
Oh, that's a very diplomatic answer. I go for salty and deep fried all the time. So what goes into these kinds of food decisions?
Yeah, that's the question that I'm really interested in for my PhD. So a food choice is a type of what we call a multi-attribute decision. And what I mean by attribute here is things like how healthy or how tasty, how familiar or how calorically dense foods are. When we make these kinds of choices, we tend to consider a whole bunch of attributes that are relevant for the choice. So when we are looking at options, we consider each of these attributes and then we come up with some overall value for that food option.
So it's not like we look at different foods and our brain makes a single snap decision. It weighs up a whole lot of different decisions, which then feed into what we ultimately choose. So how quickly does this all happen?
So it turns out that there is brain activity that reflects each of these different attributes, many of these attributes, quite early on, only a few hundred milliseconds after people start looking at a food, which is before conscious awareness and very early.
Okay, so you conducted a study to try to figure out which factors go into food decision making and kind of what order our brain processes these different factors. So what did you do?
So we were interested in investigating how quickly our brain processes different aspects of foods. So things like healthiness and tastiness. And that was because we know that aspects that are processed more quickly can have a bigger impact on our choices because it's weighted in earlier. So what we did in the study is we showed people pictures of many different kinds of foods and also recorded their brain activity while they were looking at these foods using a brain imaging method called electroencephalography or EEG, which can measure brain activity down to milliseconds. And separately, we also asked people to rate each of the foods on many different aspects, like healthiness and tastiness and familiarity. And then we used a machine learning technique to compare the patterns of brain activity to the patterns of ratings over time. So this way, we could look at the timing for when the patterns became similar to figure out when these different aspects were reflected in the brain activity.
The technology that's picking up what's going on in the brain, is that like a cap that goes on the head? It's not like you're actually putting implants in, or they're not in a brain scanner. It's like a...
That's exactly right, yeah. So EEG is a non-invasive method. It kind of fits over the head, almost like a swimming cap. And we have electrodes that we place over the scalp and we're able to measure brain activity that way.
Okay, no through the skull required. And everything. Yeah, right. And then they're sitting in front of, I guess, like a laptop or something.
That's
and
right.
The food
we
flashes
present,
up.
Yeah, we present foods on a computer screen.
And what did you discover?
So we found that there are patterns in the brain activity that reflect many different attributes from around as early as 200 milliseconds after the food is presented. And that was the case for things like healthiness, familiarity, and calorie content. And we found that some other attributes like tastiness and willingness to eat came through a little later, a couple of hundred milliseconds later.
And so what does that mean then in terms of, yeah, me looking at the vending machine at the foods presented in front of me?
Yeah, I guess to me this means that these food attributes are processed very quickly and automatically within just a few hundred milliseconds, and also at the same time with overlapping kind of representations in the brain. So rather than processing things one at a time necessarily, our brain is able to represent all of these food attributes at similar kind of timings.
Right.
And yeah, this unconscious processing of foods might be influencing our choices even before we are fully aware that we're making those choices.
So my brain's deciding what I'm going to eat before I consciously decide I'm going to go some salt and vinegar chips.
There's definitely information in the brain that's probably, you know, weighing up these factors before you consciously make the decision.
This finding, that healthiness is processed by the brain relatively quickly compared to something like tastiness, contradicts some previous research.
Traditionally, it's been thought that healthiness is processed a bit later compared to things like tastiness because it's a more abstract attribute and also something that's less immediately relevant, more relevant for our long-term health goals compared to something like how tasty something is immediately. But surprisingly, we did find that healthiness can be reflected in the brain activity as early as or even earlier than tastiness. And I think this is good news because I think it might mean that it's not always the case that we're biased towards tasty but unhealthy foods. And we did use machine learning techniques that are supposed to be more sensitive to subtle patterns of brain activity compared to the previous work.
What dimensions or attributes get processed later? What does our brain consider to be less important?
So we did find that tastiness and valence, which is how positively or negatively we view the food, and emotional arousal, how emotionally arousing we find foods in terms of like energy level, those things were came through a little bit later in the brain activity. But I will say that these attributes were still represented within hundreds of milliseconds, within a second, which is still very rapid.
Still faster than we're consciously aware of.
Still very quick and likely to be weighted into our decisions.
Now, Violet's study didn't look at the differences between people's brains. She and her colleagues did what's called a group-level analysis, which aggregates data from lots and lots of participants to draw broader conclusions. But how you or I might process our food choices differently is something Violet's interested in.
It would be really interesting to see if there are differences in how quickly people process these different aspects of foods, depending on people with different motivations for eating. So people who are health conscious or foodies who always want to try novel foods, or even between dieters and non-dieters and things like that.
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, at 3:30 p.m. mm-hmm. the tastiness overrides anything mm-hmm. else. Just gets processed a little bit faster than healthiness.
Context definitely matters.
Now, your experiment used pictures of food. What scenarios would that be most relevant to?
Yeah, that's right. So we didn't use real food in our experiment. So we're thinking that this might be most relevant for instances where you're only relying on food images or the visual aspects of foods, which I think there are plenty of examples around us, right? Using a picture menu or when you're ordering off of a delivery app or ordering groceries online or even looking at food advertising.
Would you expect to see a similar sort of thing if you did have the actual food in front of the participants? Like, I imagine smelling, you know, hot chips might tip the scale a little bit towards their favour than, like, you know, I guess just seeing the two-dimensional image.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are so many other senses we use when we are making food choices, and the smell of freshly baked cookies, or even hearing the sizzling frying pan when you're making something delicious, all of these would be picked up by the brain and will factor into the choice.
Mm. I wonder sometimes, you know, when you're in a restaurant and a waiter will come out with like a sizzling plate of something and everyone turns their head because like, oh, is it?
Yeah,
and
that's then the one like, you want to order.
I want that.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'd be also interested in what this kind of study would show in people on GLP-1 receptor agonists, because people on them commonly report having, you know, wildly changed food preferences, you know, with a preference maybe for healthier foods and the sort of like sugary, more calorie dense snacks they might normally opt for.
Yeah, I think that is super interesting and definitely a budding field of research. These drugs are relatively new, and yeah, it would be interesting to see if that's modulating some of these early visual processing of foods.
And measuring brain activity might one day tell us if we can change how our brain processes the various attributes of food.
I think this brain imaging method can be useful to test whether certain strategies might change how foods are rapidly evaluated in the brain. So, for example, does deliberately focusing on the healthiness or the calorie content of foods, or focusing on your long-term dietary goals, change the timing at which different aspects like healthiness are processed? And that future research might help us improve our food choices.
And something else you found was that people who said that certain foods were unfamiliar also said they found them less delicious, which sort of reminds me of kids saying that they don't like something even if they've never tasted it before. Is that kind of a reflection of that carried through to adulthood?
So in our study, we did find that familiarity and tastiness kind of tap into the same underlying dimension that we decided to call the appetizing dimension. And yeah, it seems like foods that people found more familiar, they tended to also find more tasty.
Has this work changed how you view your own dietary decisions?
That's a good question. So I've always found individual differences in food motivations very fascinating, which is how I ended up in this field of research. The way that people make food choices is so, there is just so much variety. And I think in my earlier years, I was a lot more conscious around the food choices that I made, had more of a controlling approach to the way that I would choose to eat. But maybe realizing how automatic this process is, it's actually helped me let go a little bit of trying to exert so much control. And I think it's actually helped me enjoy food more as well.
That was Violet Chay, a PhD student at the University of Melbourne. Her study into food choices was published in the journal Appetite. And thank you for listening to Lab Notes on ABC Radio National, where every week we dissect the science behind new discoveries and current events. I'm Belinda Smith. This episode was produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Menang Noongar people. Fiona Pepper's the producer, and it was mixed by Ross Richardson. We'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.